Coming up today, it's episode 90 of In the Front Row with Mike Vaccaro. Our guest, it's Dan Clark. You probably know him as Nitro for the American Gladiators hit TV show of the 1990s. He shares his story, which began in Japan. He became an NFL player briefly with the Rams, but when that didn't pan out, he went to Hollywood, became an actor, and had an audition that would change his life. He became Nitro with American Gladiators, and he shares his behind-the-scenes stories with the Gladiators and also tells us about his hit Netflix docuseries, Muscles and Mayhem. Our guest today in episode 90 of In the Front Row, it is Dan Nitro Clark. Well, Dan, again, we appreciate you spending a little time with us here today, learn your story. And again, a big part of that obviously was American Gladiators and the Netflix series that you had as well, Muscles of Mayhem. We're going to dive into that. I'm sure some of the stories that folks may have watched in that or can watch on Netflix. But thanks for joining us here today. It's been a while trying to get you on, but appreciate you spending some time with us here today. And excited to hear your story and again, everything that goes around with it.
Yeah, you know, Mike, I appreciate your persistence, right? And it takes a tenacity sometimes to go after and get the things you, not only the guests you want, but the things you want. You know, I have to say, you reached out quite a few times and you're always patient. And now that the schedule has just calmed down a little bit from Muscles of Mayhem and doing a lot of the things I was obligated to do that, I'm more than excited to spend some time with you and your audience.
Well, let's get into your background. You're born in Japan. Eventually for you, football kind of became your first vehicle into athletics, into sports as well. Why was it football? When did you learn about football and know that you had a talent there?
So I was born in Zama, Japan. My dad was a Marine, hoorah. My mom was Japanese. We came over here when I was about a year and a half. My dad was based in Camp Pendleton, where my older brother is actually born. You know, football was not my sport of choice, Mike. I first started boxing. I started boxing when I must have been like 5 years old. And I had a total of one boxing match. In that boxing match, I went out, had my gloves on. I was ready to go with this little kid. He headbutted me. I got a fat lip. I started to bleed. I cried. And I said, I'm not boxing again. The second sport I tried was baseball. Yeah, I said, okay, let me try baseball. So when I must have been 7 years old, I go out into the outfield. Someone hits me a fly ball. I got it. Clunk right in the head. Got a big lump. I started to cry and I said, I don't want to play baseball. So my family wanted me to play a sport. You know, there's so many positive things that happen with sports. So I said, well, I thought to myself, what about football? What's so great about football is you got a helmet. You can't get a fat lip, right? This is before we knew about CTE and concussions. You know, I was a 7-8-year-old kid and football, I had a helmet, I had a face mask, but you know, I was kind of a shy little kid. So for football, it was just really a way for me to hide behind everything and at that age, not be seen. And if you know, football then, you know, became a vehicle for a college education, for, you know, making a living. And then it was the basis for my athletic ability that I think really helped me succeed on American Gladiators.
Hey, you went to and played football at San Jose State, had a stint with the Rams as well. Take us through going from the NFL, going through football, and then life after that and figuring things out that eventually got you to the American Gladiators.
Well, let me back up. So when I was a freshman in high school, I was terrible still. I still hadn't evolved my skills. I'm in Southern California. I went to a high school called Ocean View. It was a newer high school in Huntington Beach. And the school was so big, it had two teams for freshmen. We had a freshman team and a sophomore team, but the freshman team had an A team and a B team. I was on the B team and I wasn't playing. Seven games into the season, I quit. I said, I'm not playing. It's no fun. Nobody cares. And I went home and I just told my mom and my stepdad. I said, I quit. I'm done. And that was pretty much it. Then that fall, or that spring, I went to live with my father. And my dad had a business. And in his business, he had an office space. And in that office space, when he wasn't using it at night, he rented it out to a hypnotherapist to make some extra money. And I became friends when I was a freshman in high school with this hypnotherapist. And he taught me the power of the mind. He taught me the idea behind seeing ourselves as a success before we were ever a success. And he gave me a couple sessions. He introduced me to a few amazing books that really changed my life. Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz, which was one of the first creative visualization books that I can remember. Unlimited Power by Tony Robbins, Peak Performance. I read and I studied these books and they became my Bible, so to speak. And I started to practice this art of visualization, of seeing myself successful before I had the success in the real, you know, in real life. And my sophomore year, I went from, you know, that guy who quit football the year before. By the end of my sophomore year, I was at Saddleback High School in Santa Ana, and I became the defensive player of the year. So it was interesting, you know, for me, that one thing that really had to unlock my potential was the self-confidence, self-image, seeing the success. And I used that practice of, you know, seeing my success through football, getting a scholarship to San Jose State, where I played for the late, great Jack Elway and Claude Gilbert, who passed away recently. Played a short stint with the Rams, played in Italy, ate pizza, played for pizza. And when football was over, NFL was over. I was trying out for arena leagues, couldn't make it, didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And I saw this picture. Not a picture, it was a billboard, actually, of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it was Terminator. And I looked at Arnold, and he was, you know, had these muscles, and he was massive. And then next to it was a picture for Rambo, you know, Stallone. And I said, whoa, look at those guys. These guys are massive. And it just occurred to me, Mike, that I was like, wait, if they can do that, then why can't I? It was a new thought pattern, a new way in, you know, to try something different. Because I always thought to make it in Hollywood, you had to be a, you know, a thespian. You know, you had to do to be or not to be. I didn't realize that you could have a physicality to you and a certain je ne sais quoi, and that could possibly be a path to Hollywood. Obviously, Michael, I was delusional, right? Moving to Hollywood, having no acting experience, not knowing anybody, only having, you know, $10,000, you know, NFL money to my name. But sometimes when you leap, a net appears. And that net for me came in the way of a cargo net on the American Gladiators.
Well, that's amazing, though. It started for you on the mental side, though, right? I mean, muscles and mayhem. But again, if you didn't have that mental mindset, maybe you don't get to where you got to and have that opportunity that you had with the American Gladiators.
It's an inside game, Mike. It is an inside game. You know, so much of accomplishing anything in your life is in your mind. You have to see it. You have to believe it. I've seen so many people with potential who didn't have the right mindset, who weren't willing to work. And I wish I knew how to work then like I understand it now. I mean, now it's so much more clear with social media, with Facebook, with TikTok, with these places where you get to see the late, great Kobe Bryant, you know, talking about his work ethic, where you get to see Michael Jordan, where you get to see, you know, Mike Tyson. You know, you got to do what you love. You got to do what you hate. Front of me. And I said, God, one day I'm going to be as good as him. I'm going to do the work now. And that was my goal. When I got better than that guy, I moved up to the next level of football. I said, I'm going to get better than that guy. And I kept working and working until I reached my potential. I really think if I would have known the things I know now, I would have had a lengthy NFL career. I was too lost in the brightness of the lights, you know, making the NFL for a brief moment, you know, chasing the girls. Hey, I'm an NFL player. I didn't realize the work ethic. And I think as you go higher and higher up from, you know, high school to D1 to pro and to all pro to Hall of Fame, it's, you know, God-given ability. It's hard work, but it's also that mindset, because once you know what you want to do in life, once you're really clear, the decisions are clear. You know, am I performing? Am I following the habits of someone who plays in the NFL? Am I following the habits of someone who has a lengthy career in the NFL? You know, what are they doing? Are they getting to camp, or are they getting the training early? Are they doing their training? What are they doing after? Are they staying after practice? What's their eating like? What are their sleep habits like? That stuff I didn't really understand. I was always burning things on both ends. You know, I wanted to, you know, be the guy who sacked the quarterback and also got the girl. Maybe if I wouldn't have got the girls, I would still be playing.
Yeah, it's easy to look back now, right, and see what you should have done, what you could have done. But as you said, you know, you reach your potential there with football. You saw that ad. So what did you know about American Gladiators? And did you apply to be Nitro, or did you apply just to be an American Gladiator?
So American Gladiators was just an open call audition for athletes who are good in front of the camera. And I went to that open call. It was in a park and it was ridiculous. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was in a bad part of town. Usually when you go on auditions, you know, you're at a casting office. Sometimes you're going to the Universal Studios lot, you know, and it feels very, very significant. Yeah, this was like at a park. I think I stepped over a homeless person. You know, there's a gang guy, you know, threatening to shoot me on the way. And there were all these people out there who were actors trying to be athletes. And they had us do the most rudimentary things, you know, go through these tires, run through these cones, you know. And for me, that was the easy part. Once the audition got done, they gave us three different characters. Breakdowns, Malibu, surfer, you know, of the gods, Gemini, multiple personality. And at that time, the character I chose, the name was Evander, you know, loud, cocky, explosive. And I said, that's me. You know, that's, I feel like I could do that part. Yeah. I feel like it would come natural. I would just have to extend my personality a little bit, amplify it, you know, be that guy that we all, that a lot of people have in them that we don't let come out because it's just not nice. And so I started, you know, I went on camera and they started to ask me questions in character, in this loud, explosive, cocky character. They asked me, you know, what's your favorite movie? And I was Terminator. And they said, what do you eat for dinner? And I was raw meat. And as soon as I said raw meat, the woman behind the camera was like, cut, cut. Thank you. That's it. That's enough. And I was like, oh, what a jerk. I can't believe I said raw meat. I was lambasting myself all the way to the car. Like, you idiot. You raw meat, you know, literally packed my car up at a Jeep, at a CJ7 Jeep, which I loved. But I packed my car up and I was leaving Hollywood. And I was driving down the 101 freeway, which is the big freeway that goes in and out of Hollywood. If you look up on the 101 freeway off Sunset Boulevard in the hill, you can see the Hollywood sign in the hills. I think it's quite iconic. Are you familiar with that sign?
Yeah. Mike? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm driving by the Hollywood sign. And I remember driving to Hollywood, going by that Hollywood sign. I was roommates with Jim Califat, who was Laser. We both played at the Rams. And I remember when we drove into Hollywood full of, you know, dreams, hopes, and ambitions, you know, we saw that sign and we were in my Jeep and we pulled over and my top was off the Jeep and we got out, we started flexing double biceps at the, here we come, Hollywood. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And when I left Hollywood broke, beaten, and alone, I drove by that sign. I just lifted off. I said, F you, Hollywood. And I took off, drove past it. As I'm driving past it, my pager, back when we had pagers before we had cell phones, there's this little thing that's, you know, someone would do a beep, beep, beep. You would look up at it and a number would come up and you would have to go to a payphone, which I don't even know if they exist, put change in and call. So I did that, pulled off the highway, called, and it was my agent. He says, look, you got a call back. And I said, dude, I didn't say dude to him. I said, hey, you know, Joe, his name was Joe Kokowitz. My car's packed up. I'm done. You know, I got child support. I'm already behind 1 month and it killed me to ask her to, you know, let me slide on that month. I never want to do that again. And he said, look, this is like your first callback. You know, you've been here 9 months. He said, don't leave. And I said, you know, what show is it for? And he says, it's that show where they were looking for athletes who are good in front of the camera. And I was like, really? And he says, yeah. And he said, by the way, he said, they really love that raw meat line. So I turned around, went on the audition, and it was at Universal Studios. You know, I had to knock a guy out in Breakthrough and Conquer, which was the football on the concrete. Knocked him out, and they said, kid, you got the job. And I remember when he said, you got the job, because there were no events, there were no games. It was just, you know, physical things like tackle football on concrete. I remember exactly what I asked him. I said, I have two questions for you. I said, one, what does it pay? And he was like, it pays, you know, $680 an episode, whatever the union minimum was. And I said, how many episodes? 13 episodes. So I was doing the math in my mind, you know, whatever it was, $7,500. I said, okay, well, that would keep my Hollywood dream alive for 6 months. I could pay the rent and child support and all that. And the second question I asked him, I said, will I get to hit people? He just smiled and grinned. And we were good friends after that.
So going into this, did you approach it from an athletic standpoint, or did you approach it more from an acting standpoint? What kind of did it require more from you of?
American Gladiators was the mix of athletics and, I would say, on-camera character performance. Similar in the beginning to wrestling, except nothing was scripted. But the preparation was 75-80% athletic. You know, you needed the ability to say and do things on camera. Me, I had to find that balance between being a jerk and being likable. You know, and yeah, you know, I would literally go home and like study quotes, you know, from different TV shows, from different great figures, and you know, practice them in front of the camera. So when came my time, I would have something to say instead of, well, he was just a really good competitor. He brought it hard. I want to thank him for competing. And it became a lot of fun, you know, kind of hamming it up. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like this. It's like, you know how when you play with your closest friends a sport, you can just talk all kinds of crap. you know, you suck, dude. You know, I've seen bigger arms on a clock, you know, those kind of things. And it was just that kind of fun in the on-camera portion. But the competition was do or die. You know, you wanted to compete. You're on national TV, you have a sense of pride in what you do, you want to win. And it meant at that time everything.
This is 1989 to 1992 that you're on the show. Were you surprised how big?
It was actually 96.
Okay. Yeah. 94, 95, yeah. And then 96, you came back, right? Is that what it was?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I left a season or so. We had a contract dispute, but I came back and played Nitro for one more year and then hosted the show and then went over to England and did the international shows.
Did it surprise you how big it became and what a phenomenon it became?
It was the most improbable of things. After that first 13 episodes, when everything was a train wreck, when it was a complete catastrophe, to think that people would actually watch this thing, to think that I'd be here with you, Mike Vaccaro, today, 30 years later, talking about that would have all been preposterous. You know, if you would have put me in a time capsule and told me, you know, that, I would have been like, ha ha. I'd be like, no way. I almost feel like, you know, Mike Myers. And what's the show he did? The Secret Agent. What was that show?
Austin Powers.
Mike Myers, the movie. Yeah, I feel like Austin Powers. Yeah. You know, I come back and here I am, you know, 30 years later. And that really happened in the 90s. You look, the 90s was a remarkable time for, I think, for a lot of people. You know, Clinton was in the White House. Gas was 90 cents a gallon. Van Halen, MC Hammer ruled the airwaves. Sly and Stallone dominated the box office. You know, and that was the time and the era of American Gladiators. Yeah. You know, it was when WWE and bodybuilding just started to get big. It's when you took the what used to be like a circus sideshow of Venice Beach Muscle, and that crossed over into the mainstream. So the 90s, it just was a glorious time. It was a time when there was still network TV. It was a time when Hollywood was king, and it wasn't so complicated. It was just, it was easy. It was fun. And I think that's why Muscles and Mayhem really resonated with a lot of people because, you know, the nostalgia. You know, nostalgia of a simpler time, of a purer time without all the political divisiveness. Divisiveness? Am I saying that word right?
Yeah.
With all the political bull crap, it was just, it was a little more, you know, it was when America was great, I think.
That's interesting. Could a show like that, you think, survive in a time like now? I mean, the time obviously fit the show and what it was about and you know, everything that went around it.
I have this belief that American Gladiators could still be on today. It could still follow it because it was a simple competition format, a sports format that also blended it with a reality game show. If you look at sports, they're their most watched things on TV, the Super Bowl, right? March Madness, which is starting soon. It's already started. March Madness, World Series, UFC. These are all sports. But now if you look at game shows, Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy. They've been on for 35 years. They're the longest running game shows like in history. Now, American Gladiators was a combination of those, both. You look at wrestling, you know, the stepsister, the stepbrother to American Gladiators. It's been on. There's been different leagues and incarnations of it, right? And I think American Gladiators, it could have been one of those things. The gladiators would have changed. The hosts would have changed, just like, you know, wrestling. But again, if you watch the documentary series, we go into this. I think the fatal flaw was that the guy who ran American Gladiators was the son of a huge film producer. If you've heard of MGM, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, his dad was the G in MGM. And he wanted, and this is my opinion, right? He never sat down and told me this, but he started a film company and they did some very highbrow films, you know, English films, King Richard. And I think he wanted to follow in his footsteps. This is, you know, my opinion. He wanted to follow in his footsteps of his dad. He wanted to be a movie mogul. And he took a big risk on American Gladiators because it was very off brand. And then when it got to be a success, I think maybe, perhaps somewhere inside of him, he didn't want his legacy to be the G in Gladiators. He wanted his legacy to be similar to his dad's and to be a movie mogul. So when it came time to renegotiate with the Gladiators, what we wanted was just a, you know, piece of the merchandise. This was season three. We just said, hey, you know, this thing's getting really successful. There's so much merchandise, you know, action figures, towels, lunch pails, toothpaste, Halloween costumes, anything, you know, water bottles, everything. And you're making tons of money off of this. We have built this thing on our backs, you know, with our blood and broken bones and our sweat. We're not asking you for anything that's unfair. We're just asking you to share in the merchandise, ing, profits, what is normal and typical in Hollywood. Just be a good guy, be fair. And he said, either come back to work or you're fired. I don't share. You know, I my dad didn't renegotiate and neither do I. And I think end of season three, when the show was at its peak, we were selling out Madison Square Garden on the live tour. When we came back, the fourth season, a lot of us were gone. And the show did okay that year, but soon with these replacement gladiators, people not seeing who they wanted to see, the show started to tank. And they're like, oh, people get tired of stuff. No, you made a dumb decision. You know, imagine waking up one day and all of a sudden, you know, back in those days, Hulk Hogan, Randy Macho Man, the Iron Sheik, whoever, Sergeant Slaughter, were all off WWE wrestling all at the same time. People would stop tuning in. And I think it was that mistake of his. And again, this is all just anecdotal pondering. I think that was a mistake because I really believe that Gladiator should be on in some incarnation today and should have been on through these years. Because look at Ninja Warrior. Mm-hmm. Ninja Warrior is it's the Gladiator's Eliminator. That's what, you know, they just did a lot better and a lot bigger and they made it a competition where they're doing the American Gladiator's Eliminator. And it's been on for, you know, 17 seasons, maybe.
Well, again, you guys are maybe before your time in the success that you had then, like you said, looking now, a lot of shows that are kind of similar to that, maybe not as physical. You mentioned the competition, you know, you're going up against kind of the average athletes, but there had to be some competition within the rest of the gladiators as well. Was that the case? Were you guys as competitive internally as you were externally with the competition?
Well, let me go back. We weren't going against average athletes. We went against some real studs. We went against guys that were the best, you know, in their area. I mean, these weren't average guys. And I remember having some real battles out there with, you know, Eldon Kidd, Daryl Golar, Craig Branham. I could go on and on and on with these guys. These guys were excellent athletes. What they decided to do after season one, or the first 13 episodes, is they didn't want it to be Goliath versus Goliath. Mm-hmm. They wanted it to be Davy versus Goliath. They wanted to have an underdog story. They wanted you, if you beat the gladiator in that particular event, it was a huge triumphant thing. And so they made the contestants just a little bit smaller, more agile, better athletes. We were like, you know, defensive tackles and outside linebackers, and they were like cornerbacks and running backs, where they had a lot more speed and agility. And so I think it made for great TV, and they would win. Internally, you know, I don't know. You know, I just went out and did my own thing. Believe it or not, Mike, I'm a pretty easygoing guy. I'm fiercely competitive, but it's an internal thing. And there is no animosity with it. It's not like, oh man, Mike has more YouTube viewers than me. I hate that guy. I got to bring him down. You know, I'd be like, oh, Mike's doing effing great, man. Look, I admire and I respect that guy, you know what? But I want that too. And I'm coming. That's my thought process. It's never like there's only a limited bit to go around. It's always like there's plenty, and it's up to each man to go out and women to go out and get what's yours. I just think the pressure, greatness, and the things you want in your life, they're available to everyone, even your competitors. And the pressure is on people who want to succeed to go out and grab it first. Right. And I honestly believe that. And for me, it's just a matter of getting reps in, you know, whether it's something physical, like CrossFit. I started competing in CrossFit, you know, and got good really fast, but I just got the reps in. Now I play the vicious sport of pickleball. So I love pickleball, but you know, for me, it's not just playing games. I'm a student. I love learning. I love getting better. I love getting my reps in. I love that feeling of like, oh God, this guy used to kick my butt, you know, 6 months ago, and now I'm kicking his butt. I love that feeling of getting better and learning. And I think, you know, for me, even in Gladiators, that's what it was as far as the competitive part. I think the other part, which is crazy though, was just, like I said, the 90s in Hollywood. It was just, crazy free time before, you know, cell phones and social media, you know, where you could do things, not necessarily always good things, but, you know, there wasn't always someone, you know, if you got into a fight with the guy in the parking lot, you got into a fight, not people aren't filming it. You settled your differences. Not that I think it's right to fight, but if it happened, you know.
Yeah, it certainly would be interesting if American Gladiators was going on in the time of social media, for sure. And again, you mentioned, you know, competitiveness, and, you know, there's no pickleball, but there was some great competition, some great events. Was there an event that you loved to be a part of, and an event that you despised, that you knew it was going to be a tough day on the set because I'm going in this event?
Events, you know, they brought in new ones. They had old ones. I think in the beginning, being the bigger guys, climbing up the wall was hard because you didn't have the grip strength. And plus you had to hold up, you know, whatever you were, 225 pounds, Gemini 270, you know, Tower 290, Thunder 290 pounds. You're trying to pull yourself up on these little tiny pebbles with two fingers, you know, trying to climb up a wall. I think that one was, you know, difficult just because of basic size and mass. you know what? They just came and they went, and you just did the best you could. Human Cannonball was the absolute worst. If people, you know, listening remember Human Cannonball, they swung down off of like Tarzan off of a platform, and you have this little tiny pad you're holding, and they swing into you. By the time they hit you, it's like a Mack truck, and you're supposed to stand up on this platform and block them with a pad. And I remember they said, oh, you can't like push them out. You can't dodge. You just have to stick there and take it, you know, just take it, man. We were getting smashed. The women were getting smashed. And that only lasted, I think, 13 episodes. And you know, look, I have absolutely, you know, no regrets with American Gladiators. It was such an amazing, you know, time of life. And it was fun. It was loud. It was bold. I wish they would have shared a little more in the success? Yeah. Do I like the way things ended? No, but I had no regrets, man. It was some of the best times of my life, and I've made some great friendships that I still have today. And and when I go out, you know, doing Comic Cons and do signings and stuff, I'm just so grateful and so blessed and feel so privileged to have so many people come up and take pictures and stuff, you know, and tell me stories of how they love the show and what it meant to them. And it's just a really good feeling. And I'm very, very grateful for that.
And you saw that again in your Netflix, again, the docuseries Muscles of Mayhem. What went into that? Why now to bring all that out? Because again, if people didn't watch it, I enjoyed it. I binge watched it, and it was great to kind of look back and remember those times, remember watching those shows as I was, I think, in high school at the time. But, you know, what went into going into that and getting that, you know, on Netflix now?
What do you mean? I don't know your question,
Mike. Again, why now? Why, you know, bring that out now, have the documentary now? Obviously, it was very successful. But it's been, you know, years since the American Gladiators, but did it surprise you that it was so successful and it was a number one hit on Netflix?
No, I always knew there was a big fan base for the show, for us gladiators. I just know because I go out in the street, you know, and I see a guy in the grocery store, Nitro, you know, driving down the highway, someone honks, I look over, you know, you're Nitro. So, I mean, I know there's a recognizability and that the show meant a lot to a lot of people, and they had a lot of fun. So I wasn't surprised that we came out number one. You say, why now? I wrote a book, Gladiator, True Story of Roy's Rage and Redemption, is my memoir, maybe like 12 years ago for Simon & Schuster. And the way it came about is someone read the book. They called me and they said, look, you know, your book's amazing. You know, it's deep. It's a human. You know, I cried a few times in your book. I didn't expect to be affected. I didn't know there's that much story behind it. And he says it's really, really phenomenal. I think, you know, there's a docuseries. And docuseries is that new breed of things in the last 5, 6, 7 years. There wasn't that medium before. It was documentary films. And they were usually that really, you know, highbrow investigative reporting stuff, subject matter. And then I think when The Last Dance came out, Tiger King came out, we saw it as docu-entertainment. There's this new type. And this company in Canada, Game 7, called me and said, look, we think we can do it. We love your book. We can get you a meeting at Netflix. Do you have an idea for the show? And I was like, I had no idea. And I was like, yeah, sure. When's the meeting? You know, because I've lived the story. I know the other gladiators, so I have an idea of what I wanted to see. I had just watched Michael Jordan's The Last Dance, so I understood. Like then, and I've written, you know, another book, and I've written 20 screenplays. I've written and directed a movie, so I understand storytelling. You know, I've done a TED Talk, so I understand how to tell stories. And a lot of times, it's just finding the right format and the medium. And then I watched, like I said, Last Dance, and I said, okay, that's American Gladiators. I said, instead of the Bulls organization, Jerry Krause and management, it's Samuel Goldwyn and company. And instead of the Bulls, it's the Gladiators. So the backdrop of Muscles and Mayhem is the story, is the through line of the American Gladiators and how the producer's greed really kept the show from exploding and caused it to implode. As similar to The Last Dance, where it was the general manager's thought that it was him that created that organization, not Michael Jordan and Phil, and that imploded. So I just kind of followed that same paradigm, and I, you know, called Netflix, pitched them. They said they loved it. Can you write up some episodes? I said, yeah, here's the episode breakdown. Again, using The Last Dance as the paradigm. Now that I say that, people have seen both, like, oh, yeah. You know, and I think being that it came from me, there was a authenticity and a heart to it. Being that it came from the stories of the other gladiators directly, who were the heart and the soul of it, I think that also, in addition, you know, gave it a real authenticity. And the one thing I said as we were bringing in the directors and stuff, I said, look, I don't want this to be, you know, oh, it was so hard for me. You know, I want, number one, I want people to watch this, and I wanted to bring them back to that time in the 90s. I want to have this nostalgic flavor, and I want each character to, if they have it, to have their pain to purpose story. You know, I am this way because, and this is what happened. And, you know, some of the story, character storylines, characters, the people storylines, you know, ended up in, you know, from tragedy to triumph, and others were triumph to tragedy. And I wanted to show that, and I wanted to, you know, let people get to know the story behind the gladiators, at least the way I saw it and the way I knew it. And I wanted to entertain people too. You know, I think it was great. And we got lucky getting a great directors, Tony Vianucu and Jared Hess, who did Napoleon Dynamite, Nacho Libre, who's now going off and doing this huge film for Warner Brothers, Minecraft. We got lucky. They had a sense of humanity to it. The animation is fantastic. They did the He-Man animation. Fantastic. If I remember when he approached me, Jared, and he said, hey, Dan, you know, hey, bro, he's really like a positive guy. Bro, we're going to do animation. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. You know, I'm like, what you talking about, Willis? What do you mean you're going to animate me? Because animation, when someone says, Mike, we're going to animate you, you could come out as, you know, Ren and Stimpy, Beavis and Butthead. I mean, there's so many ways it can go wrong. Again, his idea was to do it 90s style like He-Man, and it was so good, and it's so genius, and just the idea, as you know, to see us in different scenes, and it's so much better than if they had actors come and reenact certain stories we told, right? Because, you know, end of the day, Gladiators was a serious competition, but through the lens of today, it's some of it, you know, some of the situations and things are funny. You know, grown men and running around in tight red, white, and blue spandex, you know, with flowy hair and you know, oiled up and saying things like, I eat raw meat.
Well, you saying I eat raw meat, that led you quite a bit and quite a way here in your career. As you watched Muscles of Mayhem, what was your take? What was your, you know, did you have an emotion as you watched that and relived a little bit of that in watching it?
Well, to sell the show, I had to tell all the stories that I told in the docuseries. You just can't go into a room with somebody and say, let's do a show about American Gladiators. Like, well, what's the story? You know, so I told all those stories people see in the docuseries. So I knew the emotionality to it, and I knew the arc to it. It wasn't something that was found like interviewing me. You're right. That was there. So for me, watching it, it was almost, I'd already lived it. And then in being part of the editing process, I've watched each episode, you know, 10 times. Mm-hmm. I think it's always different watching it with a live audience. And I had about 25, 30 people over my house, you know, to celebrate because I'm so proud of it. I'm so proud of it. And, you know, it was a different kind of nervous. It's almost like when your kid is going up to bat, you know, in a game, that kind of nervousness, like, oh my gosh, how's he going to do? Are people going to like it? And, you know, some of the things you reveal, at least I revealed are quite personal and, and, you know, do I sound like a tool? You know, I think it's more worried about how you come off, even though you're speaking your truth, and if people are going to like it. And, you know, resoundingly, it seems like people enjoyed it. And I, And I do have this belief because a lot of the work I do, there's a certain emotionality and a authenticity and a humanness to it in the books I write, and the scripts are in the movie scripts I write and the speeches I give when I go speak. And you wonder sometimes how that lands with people, but I think people are craving authenticity, you know, even more so now when we live in a social media world where everyone is putting forth perfect. Look at my life. Look at my weekend. Look at this, you know. I think, you know, that real human connection of, you know, when we were more primitive people, of telling stories by the fireplace that connected us all, that we would pass on to each other, that resonated with us. I think that's a lost art. And, you know, for me, seeing that the things that I shared personally, where I shared some of my, you know, secrets, some of my shame, some of my ugliness, I guess you would call it, internal ugliness. And to see through my DMs on social and my emails, it seems like those are the things people responded to most. And again, I think that's because when you go in and you share your vulnerability, it connects us to people. Because we all have that those parts of ourselves. And then when we see it in others, especially in others that we don't expect it from, it connects them to us in a very, very human way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it was very honest, very, as you said, authentic as well, very personal stories that you shared, other people as well. Again, folks, if you're watching this and you haven't seen it, Muscles of Mayhem on Netflix. Certainly, if you grew up during that time and watch American Gladiators, it's certainly great behind the scenes of, as you said, what affected you guys. Some of them went from highs to lows, lows to highs in your careers. As you said, after that, you know, acting, books, speaking as well. What's next for you? What's next for Dan Clark?
I don't know if there's a next, as there's just a perpetual force in motion. It's to continuing to do things. Writing a football movie with a partner about the oldest rookie in the NFL to get his first start at 32 years old, who went on to win two Super Bowls with the Broncos and play in the league 7 years. So it's essentially about a guy named David Diaz Infante, who I played with at San Jose State. He got cut 8 times and it took him 10 years before he finally made an NFL roster and started. And I think it was the 11th game of the season. And so it's really a tale of perseverance, overcoming the odds and, you know, as he says, being just dumb enough to keep going and people telling you to quit. So I love that story, and I'm working on a couple other projects like that, a couple other reality type docuseries shows. And I go out speaking. You know, I speak to different colleges and different corporations, motivation colleges. A lot of the college stuff is about, you know, masculinity and positive masculinity and what that looks like today. The corporate stuff is more motivational, small groups, large groups, and yeah, I have a 12-year-old, you know, stepson. I've got a older son too, living in Portugal. And you know, I've got a great partner. She's fantastic. And, you know, just doing the things and mostly, you know, these days I train, I take my ice baths. I'm trying to figure out how to, keep the health span along with increasing the lifespan. Yeah. I'm a big advocate for that. And you know, on the pickleball court a lot.
You're going to turn 60 in a couple of months, right? Anything big planned to turning 60?
Well, I didn't know if I was going to make it here, Mike, to be honest. You know, my dad passed away at 59. His brother passed away at 60. So the men in my family, my younger brother, my older brother died when I was 10. He was 12. My younger brother died when he was 45. So the men in my family, they don't always live a long time. You know, so 60 will be a monumental thing for me. And I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. I cannot believe that it's here. You know, I was just that kid, you know, on the gladiators. This seems like yesterday, you know, where I was jousting people and, you know, running around, you know, coming out on the floor in Madison Square Garden. And it's just, yeah, it's hard to believe it's here. And yeah, I really look at time in a different way, you know. I look at time, and I'm not a pessimist, but to say if I'm going to be 60 and I get 15 good years, which is 16 more years than my father, you know, that means, you know, I've got 15 summer times left. I may be 90, I may be 21, you know, maybe 100, but, you know, let's just say 75, that's a good run. I think I'll live longer, but I got 15 summer times. What do I want to do this summer? I got 15 left, you know what I mean? And I think it really makes you, by being aware of time, by being aware of your mortality, I think it really makes you pay attention to time. You know, there's a Japanese, you know, story about people walking towards a cliff. Some people, you know, everyone walks towards that cliff and everyone's going to fall off of it. Some people are oblivious and don't want to know when the cliff is coming and they just fall. I'm the guy who wants to know the cliff is coming so I can enjoy that, really, really enjoy that time between now and when I fall off that cliff. So 60s is interesting. It's interesting, and I'm excited and I'm scared at the same time.
Well, early happy birthday to you again. Sounds like, again, exciting times ahead for you, behind you as well. How can people follow you on social media? I'm sure you're on social media. How can they follow you to know when your football movie is about to come out?
Dan at dannitroclark.net. Facebook, Instagram. I have YouTube, but I'm rarely there, you know, so I I'm rarely on social. You know, someone can also, my email, it's easy to find, Dan at dannitroclark.net. You know, they're all the same. And, you know, drop me a line. I love to, you know, I love people. One of the things, like I said, when I go to speak or I go out to Comic Cons and I get to meet, I love people. I love to hear the stories. I love to hear where they're, I've never gotten tired of that after, you know, 35 years. I truly, truly love most people. That's what we'll say.
We'll end on that. Dan, I can't thank you enough for coming on, sharing your story, taking us behind the scenes a little bit. And again, being very honest with us as well as you are in the docuseries, Muscles of Mayhem, again on Netflix. Check it out if you haven't. Some great stuff, especially if you're someone like me who grew up watching that show. Very interesting to see the behind the scenes of it and learn more about you and the others as well, beyond Nitro and Gemini and Laser and everything else.
Thanks, Mike, for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Our thanks to Dan Clark for spending some time with us and sharing his very honest story with us here today at his time with the American Gladiators. As always, we thank you for watching and for listening and invite you to like, to share, and to subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. More great guests come your way very soon. For our creator, producer, director, J.R. Quitman, I'm Mike Vaccaro. We'll see you next time on another edition of In the Front Row with Mike Vaccaro. Have a great day, everybody.